Fail. That'd be good one. To me, I get well.
Oh, that should probably like blow.
There were guys that like whatever wanted.
While we're waiting to get started, could everyone please check their mics before we start the meeting? Lizzie Barrett, can you check your mic? Beautiful. Are all the mics checked?
And we're going to test. Okay.
Good afternoon. The time is 4:47, and by the power vested in me by the trustees of Cornell University, I'm going to call this meeting to order. It is Thursday, September 14th, 2023. We will start with the land acknowledgement in 45 seconds. Oh, lovely. Cornell University is located in the traditional homelands of the Gaigahono Cayuga Nation. The Gaigahono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gaigahono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gaigahono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. Thank you, everybody. We will now move on to approval of the minutes. Could everyone take a couple minutes and look at the minutes? Oh, actually, hold on 1 second. We have to do a call to order. Can we do that first? Yeah, thank you.
For attendance, Marwa Bakri. Present. Lucia Balistrieri. Lizzie Barrett.
Present.
Issa Tuberi.
Present.
Rocco DiLorenzo.
Here.
Karis Everett.
Present.
Niles Height.
Here.
Clyde Letterman.
Present.
Ezugo Anonye.
Present.
Suraj Puri. Casey Platkin.
I'm holding his Brock Saint.
Actually,
no, sorry. It's Raj.
I'm holding Brock.
Excuse me.
Imani Rizeka. Andrew Richmond.
Present.
Stellar Sun.
I'm holding her Brock Saint. Excuse me.
Andrew Talone.
Present.
Benjamin Terhar. Claire Ting.
Present.
Adam Vincent.
Present.
Amy Wang.
Present.
And then Patrick Keel.
Present. Lovely. We will now approve the meeting minutes. Could everyone take a couple minutes and look at the previous meetings, meeting minutes? Representative Everett.
A motion to pass last week's meeting minutes by unanimous consent.
Second.
There's a second on the floor. The motion on the floor is to pass the meeting minutes from last week by unanimous consent. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, those meeting minutes are passed. We will now move on to open microphone. This is a time for community members, any of you in the audience, to say a couple words if anybody has anything they would like to bring up. Seeing none, we will move on. Director Verma.
Motion to put the all rules on hold to move up Resolution 19 election rules before reports. I have a prelim and I'd like to be able to talk about election rules in a substantial manner before I have to leave.
Lovely. The motion on the floor is to suspend rules and move the resolution discussing election rules to before presentations. Is that by unanimous consent?
By unanimous consent.
Is there any dissent to that motion? Seeing no dissent, we will be moving into the resolution to discuss election rules. And I will be ceding the chairship to Vice President Ting.
Thank you, everyone. If we can get the primary sponsor to take the floor.
Hello, everyone. So I'll be presenting Resolution 19, Election Rules. It is quite lengthy, so instead of reading through all of the election rules right now, I'll highlight some of the key updates that have been made since the spring election. So going down the list, first one will be definitions. We've included X as opposed to Twitter, its former name, and included GroupMe and SideChat as forms of social media networks. Working that would be included within the definition of social media. On petitions, we've, as a committee, agreed to reduce the amount of petitions required per candidate. If you look at the college-specific seats, the specific wording is now that it's 25 signatures per seat on the student assembly. So for arts and sciences, there are 3 seats, so that would mean 75 petitions to be eligible. Then after this, we've also changed petitioning to go back to the paper form. This was mainly a discussion had with Elections Committee on the fact that we had more engagement with constituents from colleges when this was an in-person fashion. I think this is something that prior to COVID, we had a lot more engagement with, and as a committee, we agreed that this would be a wise decision to make. It also helps on levels of accountability in terms of making sure that when petitioners get candidate or get community members to sign their petition, it's of the constituency that they are collecting signatures for. And on that note, we clarified that petitioners must be the ones collecting in this in-person manner. There's additional wording in the compliance with university policy and suit of code of conduct. The campaign finances have been increased from 25 as the initial campaign financing to $40. This allows for not an increase in the amount of funds allocated to each candidate, but not significantly enough that it alters the course of elections. It's also just to increase engagement with our elections because we had lower rates in recent years, and I think that it would be a great idea to give candidates a little more leeway to have these discussions and broadcast their campaigns a little more. So if this requires any additional funding, I will work with BB DiLorenzo to make that happen. And on the note of financing, we will ask for an estimate just to ensure a level of accountability on what these funds are going to be allocated to. So when candidates go into the campaign period, there will be a form to ask them just a basic estimate of what they would be allocating funds towards. And then lastly, the last major edit that has been made is in the process of election challenges. When going for a reconsideration, it would move the point of contact to the chair of the Office of Ethics. In prior years, we've had all reconsiderations go to the same committee that reviewed the challenge itself, which doesn't allow for a proper checks and balances on elections itself. As such, I think it's wise that we move it such that the Office of Ethics be the final review of any final challenge hearings, just for a level of accountability both to the Elections Committee and also a level of neutrality. With all of that in mind, I will let you read through the rules. Those are the major updates that I have, and I am open to any questions and am super excited to talk about the rules.
Thank you so much, Director Verma. And moving forward, could you please speak a little bit closer into the microphone so that we're able to hear your voice throughout the room as well as catch it on the Zoom?
Apologies. Is this better?
Yes, much better. Thank you so much for that presentation. I understand that Elections Committee has been working diligently to get these rules passed. With that being said, I'd like to open the floor to any comments or questions. Representative Wallen.
You had mentioned that something about constituencies that would it be required for students to get signatures from whom they will represent. So regarding like identity-based liaisons, would they have to get signatures from those people?
No, so for the at-large positions, those go to the general undergraduate body. For college-specific positions, you'd have to collect signatures from the colleges specifically. And for freshmen and transfer ups, the same rules apply, but it's just for those three specific positions.
Could you repeat which positions we need?
It would be freshmen, transfer, and then any of the college specific representatives.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
President Keel.
Yeah, thank you, Director Verma, for presenting this today. I'll start by saying that I've been, I think, fairly vocal that I'm not a fan of petitions. I think that they decrease engagement overall. I think the real test of whether someone wants to be on the assembly or not is not collecting petition signatures, but it's running an election. And if you have a lot of people running an election, that'll be a natural vetting process for anybody who's not engaged. I think a thing we've seen in the past is that people, you know, collect petition signatures, people are not able to get petition signatures, and then they're not put on the ballot, which I think decreases overall engagement. I think that having the most amount of people on the ballot is ideal. You know, there's every year we have tons and tons of freshmen who run, and it's not a problem, especially since we use hair tabulation, which just means that everything gets added up over time. So as people get eliminated, those votes aren't detracted. They're actually just added to the overall as they're ranked. So with those things being said, I think there's a lot of also research saying that petitions are fairly anti-democratic. That's why a lot of states don't use them anymore. New York still does for some of their elections. But with that, I would move to amend the election rules to strike section 2 regarding petitions. Section C, subsection 2 regarding petitions and all other further notes on petitions.
There's a motion on the floor. Do we have a second?
Second. Aye.
There is a second. Do we have any dissent? State your dissent.
So you would want to remove petition like as a general rule from here on out from the election process? What would I have to motion to have people talk about this? I feel like there should maybe be a little more discussion on how people feel about it.
There is a motion. There's a second. There's now a dissent. We'll now go into voting. You withdraw your motion. All right. So the floor is now open regarding this debate. Do we have any comments? Yes, Vice President Parikh.
Yeah. This is more of a question both to President Kuehl and Chair Verma. I'm wondering like kind of why the reasoning behind a lot of the changes in petitions to like only paper petitions and not allowing supporters to petition, if I'm reading the rules correctly, and also like a little bit more elaboration on why you want to completely get rid of the petition process.
Sure. If you don't mind if I go first. There were a couple of reasons discussed during the Elections Committee meeting, partially to I guess answer part of what President Kuehl has brought up a little bit on engagement itself. In the past, we've had much higher levels of engagement during the petitioning process, and also understanding that elections are running through means of using an in-person petitioning process. The second part of that being having the petitioner themselves go collect the petitions is a level of engagement with their constituents themselves. Actual engagement with the populations they hope to represent,
And there's also an additional stipulation to that that was added. It was a lower level of petitions required, more so that it's not an extreme burden for an individual to collect all of the signatures, but rather a threshold enough that they substantially engage students before they begin campaigning for any position on student assembly.
Thank you so much. Representative Courtney.
Hi. Excuse me. I just to be very clear, the petition only—
Could you please speak closer into the mic, please?
Absolutely. Sorry about that. Just to be clear, you said 25 signatures, correct?
So if you go back to, sorry, if you go back to Article 1, Section C, Subsection 1, it specifies for each position. So for president and executive vice president, it is now 250 as opposed to 300. For most at-large positions, including but not limited to the minority liaison at large, first-gen student, international student, and students with disabilities representatives, it will be now 50. For all other at-large seats, it should be 100, such as the undesignated at-large, which used to be 150. And for any college-specific seats, i.e. for HUMEC, for Brooks, AAP, et cetera, it would be 25 because there's only one seat on student assembly. And as the number of seats increase on student assembly, the threshold increases by 25, such that arts and sciences, which has three seats on the student assembly, would be a petition, a requirement of about 75.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying. Based on those numbers that you just read, it seems like if the purpose is for potential candidates to actively engage with the community, 25 students is not doing that. And with that being said, it seems like one, I don't know if there is an accountability measure for those signatures. And two, it seems like if someone is on the fence about running and about participating in leadership within the student population on this campus, the thought of going and having to do this extra step that, as President Keel mentioned, has been removed from most of democratic processes, it just seems like an extra step that is unnecessary and isn't the best. Do we— rhetorical question, but is a petition the best way to ensure that students are engaging with the community?
If I might respond to your rhetorical question, we've tested a couple of different alternatives to petitioning. One, as a means of still having a period during the elections process during which we can promote the elections per se, because if we were to move into campaigns as it stands on its own, a lot of students haven't yet engaged at that point, and often a lot of candidates who hoped to run for student assembly often fall through the cracks in that method. Second, the point is not supposed to be a significant threshold, but rather to promote student assembly and engagement with student assembly elections. So it's not supposed to serve as a significant threshold, but rather a means of stepping out into the public. It is something that we've had in the election rules prior. The intention of lowering the amounts was for it to be less of a burden to students, but rather a means to which to promote engagement with student assembly itself.
Thank you so much, Director Verma. To promote more efficient debate, I will now be enforcing a speaking time of 1 minute and 30 seconds. That being said, by virtue of going in speaking order, Chairperson Bangra.
Yeah, sure. My question is more so of a logistical one, which is that petitions have existed, I guess, in the election rules for a while now. It's very hard to track when they were first added in. What would removing this look like on the end of the elections committee and the office of the assemblies? How would this affect the calendar? Just like, what would this new reality for the assembly and for our elections coming up look like?
As a preface, thank you for your question. As a preface, I will note that in the past we have had issues of finalizing election rules and that impeding on the progress of the elections per se. The outline calendar as it stands The call to candidates would go out tomorrow. So workshopping amendments is something that I would advise against. Rather, pass a set of rules as it stands today. Additionally, any changes to the election calendar would have to first be approved and approved by the committee, as well as just in consultation with the Office of Assemblies, who do an amazing job of running these elections on their end. So logistically, there would be some barriers, which I would err on the side of caution. I am more than happy to workshop such changes over the semester with a swift conclusion to special elections. That would be the primary aim of the rest of my semester in office, being to refine the election rules prior to the spring semester.
Thank you so much, Chairperson Verma. President Kiel?
Yeah, so I was just going to say, even though it will not affect the election calendar, I think it would still give people plenty of time to, you know, get signed up. Like, all it does is, instead of having a petitioning period, you just have a sign up period. I also think that the real way to get people involved is not to have somebody go out and get 25 signatures and then go the real, and we've seen this historically, especially in the Cal's race last year. You had a competitive election, you had two seats for multiple people. And even though some of those people got eliminated because of petitioning rules at the end of the elections, after they had already ran, the thing that got people out and campaigning was seeing their fellow peers campaigning. I mean, you look at Adam's race, you had a representative, he was outside of classrooms, and the only reason another person got engaged was because they saw him campaigning. And we're like, oh my God, I got to step myself up. And instead of engaging with 25 people and then being done with it and being like, I'm in an uncontested race, now they're interacting with as many people as they possibly can. They're not just like, okay, I got to hit this 75 or this 100 for undesignated. I've got to hit this 100 person barrier and then I'm done. Instead, you've got them interacting with as many people as they possibly can.
Director Verma, your response?
If I might add on that note, I will say that the spring elections was unique in nature. I will say that the petitioning process was not run as smoothly as it ideally should and shouldn't be used as a primary example of how it should have been run, which the elections committee is working its best to have the most representative and engaged form of petitions run this semester onwards. That being said, I think that there was a good level of creation of ideas and engagement in terms of petitioning. I think that there's a point of clarity that elections should be more accountable in terms of the petitioning process, for which there is a validation period that has been allotted in the calendar for the semester onward. So I guess on that note, just I think take last semester's race with Adam and the Cal's race specifically less as a pointing example, but just a word of caution from my end.
Thank you so much. Representative Richmond.
That is so loud. I kind of got to disagree wholeheartedly with the idea of getting rid of petitioning. And honestly, I would prefer that it not be changed whatsoever. I know I ran in a race last fall for freshman rep that had like a lot of people, and I didn't decide to like sign up to run until the night before petition signatures were due, which was like kind of unfortunate for me, but like a couple of my friends and I were all like, yeah, we should do this. And like some of them realized like 75 signatures was going to be tough. And like they were in it for the wrong reason. So like, you know, it did kind of vet them out of it. And the important thing to realize at the end of the day is that as like idealistically as I'd like to look at student assembly races, like this is a popularity contest. I mean, nobody knew what I wanted to do last year. I just got all my friends to vote for me. I don't think any of them had any idea what I was doing. So keeping a way to vet some candidates out, I don't think it's a bad idea.
Thank you so much. Do you have a response?
I would thank you for your response, Representative Richmond. I will say, as I've echoed before, it has served as a level of accountability. If we were to get rid of the petition process itself, I am personally against that. It is something that we discussed in committee prior to this. Third, there should still be a level of screening candidates for the very reason that Representative Richmond mentioned. I think a sort of like litmus test of the intentions of candidates, not for better word, trolling, to apply for student assembly is a necessary check sometimes, as we've seen. And I think that even if a low bar petitioning allows for this level of testing, and I think that it is something that should be kept in check. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Vice President DiLorenzo.
Thank you. So a few thoughts I have on this. I'm pretty indifferent, conflicted. I don't know if you could tell when I second the motion, but for me, I remember petitioning in Nassies at 2 a.m. the night before. I was in the trenches. It was very difficult. To some degree, it is a little bit of a pain. I will also say that it's pretty important to gauge people's interests. And that's where I see it coming from. And I think, one of the concerning things about this amendment or resolution is that we now do this in-person signatures, which in my opinion, they have a very high chance of getting manipulated. You can just basically sign it, whereas before you had to log in with Cornell NetID. And I have one more point, which is, sorry, thank you. I don't know, I had three things, but it was basically just I think it's important. It's just,
If I may respond, on the note of manipulation of signatures, we have a method to check these. The Office of Assemblies does validate petitions. I will be involved in this process. It is outlined that there is a 10% sampling method. We typically will try to do that, a more thorough analysis of all petitions. We haven't allotted time during the calendar to do so. So it's more in the spirit of encouraging engagement with constituents to move it to in-person, and more on the end of elections and the Office of Assemblies in terms of the logistics of getting that done.
Thank you. Vice President Barry.
I would just say that I think I'm against the resolution just because I feel like the petitions, they do have do a good job of vetting potential candidates before they enter their race. It takes a certain level of community engagement, involvement, passion, boldness to go up to random people and ask for their signature. And honestly, most of the races, they require 75 to 100 signatures. And I'm pretty sure, I remember Representative Rezeka, she was in Duffield Hall. She got 300 signatures within an hour. If you're really about it, you'll get those signatures. I don't think they're a super huge barrier to enter the student assembly. With that being said, I could potentially be swayed if there was another metric added to kind of vet the interest of candidates before they enter their race.
Thank you, Representative Barry, for your response. As I said, I'm more than happy to workshop more levels of, I guess, truth testing or adding a layer of litmus testing the intentions and candidacies of any candidates running. I would say this is something that requires further research and testing over the semester, which again is the primary role I hold after the selection would end.
Seeing as there are several placards up, I will now be making the speaking time 1 minute. That being said, Representative Barrett, you have the floor.
More of a question, because I know obviously the hotel school, you have trouble filling the seat, but what other roles traditionally go unfilled? Because the hotel school, I know there's so many other leadership positions in our organization that kids just don't feel the need to be involved in something broader because there already are a student assembly type thing going on in the hotel school. So I don't know if that was why sometimes there was not getting enough signatures or kids not wanting to run. Could be other opportunities school dependent.
Sorry, is your question regarding why there are unfilled seats? Or
what are the traditionally unfilled seats? And is it has something to do with something else?
So in my experience on the assembly, the unfilled seats that I tend to see are there's usually one arts and sciences seat that is filled, at least one, but the ones that typically don't have a lot of individuals running for are the issue specific seats. So disabilities rep, if you see right now, we're actually lacking a disabilities rep. Women's issues does get filled from time to time. LGBTQ liaison, we are very fortunate this year to have a very active one, but it's always the at-large issues reps that tend to go unfilled. I hope that's helpful.
And if it's like an issue, they might be more uncomfortable approaching people about it because they don't know where they stand. Like, to hear what I'm saying.
If I may respond briefly to that, just in terms of elections engagement, that is something that I am wholeheartedly passionate to keep working on. The orgs that I work outside of Student Assembly on, namely Cornell Votes, our whole drive this semester is into one, increase national election engagement, but also Student Assembly engagement. If you look at our website, we've got a whole section on Student Assembly. We were the main partners that worked on campaigning for Student Assembly elections last semester. And that's something I wholeheartedly want to ramp up moving forward and make sure that seats that have been traditionally unfilled do go filled going forward.
Thank you for that. President Kuehl.
Yeah, so I would just like to reiterate, and first of all, I'm just going to start by saying, like, this is totally up to the will of the Assembly. If this is the way we feel like it's best, I'm totally okay with that. I just think the best vetting process are elections. That's why we do it. You know, if there are candidates who aren't serious about a position, they're going to go out and not campaign as hard as the people who do care about the position and do want to make systemic change. Those are the people you want to see. And elections do that. That's the point of them. But we have this historical thing where we have, you know, in the spring elections, we had tons of people who ran who didn't get petition signatures, and now we have unfilled seats. And the other thing I'd say is that, I think those are the only things.
Thank you for that. Director Verma, your response?
I guess in terms of the last elections, as a committee, we've learned more on how to engage students better and how to run petitioning better. I'd like to take the spring as a learning experience rather than a reason to completely knock out petitions in terms of the validity of being able to engage the community itself. So while I agree with the sentiment that you carry, President Kuehl, I think that it's not a reason to remove petitions, but rather fortify engagement during that period.
Thank you so much. Vice President Letterman?
Yeah, sure. So I would say first, you know, obviously I'm running up again, and even though having petitions would probably benefit me, I think they're generally speaking a bad idea. You know, we had 9 candidates disqualified in the spring. And as a result, we came in, I think, with 14 members instead of the sort of 25 that we're supposed to have. To me, that's a big problem. I also think we just got to lower the barrier to entry here. You know, we've got a really bad reputation as being an organization on campus that's totally insular. And by the way, we're the organization on campus that spends more money than all other organizations. And so I wanted it as easy as possible for folks to come in here and show up. And I think we're moving in the right direction that year. I just feel like delaying elections more and having a higher barrier to entry is not going to help out with that. Is getting rid of his petitions perfect? Probably not. Do I think it moves us in the right direction? Absolutely. So I'll be voting yes.
Thank you for your response, VP Letterman. I will say, in the very statement that you made at the end, you mentioned that it is an imperfect fix to the system. While I do agree that we should maintain petitioning, I think that the processes that we should be working on are improving engagement. I don't think that the causative agent of this is the petitioning itself. I think there's a lot of things that elections can improve on as a whole, and I'm more than happy to work on these. That was the response, but.
Thank you for that. Representative Wang.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I don't think like 25 or 50 or 75 petition signatures is like a really high barrier to entry, because if you think about it, if they're unwilling to go out and interact with like 25 to 75 people to get signatures, like what are the chances they're going to actually come to meetings if they're elected or like actually be passionate about any of the like issues on campus? So I think it's a good way to kind of vet out candidates who are not really serious about what Student Assembly does. Because at the end of the day, we do need people on Student Assembly who are actually passionate and willing to show up and, you know, do the actual tasks that need to be done.
Thank you for that. Representative Height?
My only question is, because you mentioned earlier that there was an issue in terms of like last year elections, they weren't done the way they were supposed to. My question is, assuming this goes forward, will the signatures that like are required, will they be checked like thoroughly this time? Because last semester, I remember I had caught it, but the elections committee did not, which so,
I do have a more thorough response, maybe not in the 1 minute that I have, which I'd be more than happy to talk about in terms of transparency of how the elections committee works. But we do have a separate period that has been added to the elections calendar that was not present in the spring semester to thoroughly vet the validity of petitions. So we, this process runs more smoothly. We work with the Office of Assemblies. The elections committee itself works on this. We aim to make sure that this is a thoroughly vetted and transparent process. It's about like 3 days just allotted to the validation of each of the signatures of all of the candidates that are running.
Thank you for that, Representative Wallen.
I would say the biggest barrier to like people running for something on student assembly isn't the petitions. I would say it's the fact that you have to be on student assembly. I think that is a just, I think if you want to do one for student assembly, I don't think that, oh, I have to talk to 25 people is gonna be the thing that's gonna like, oh, now I'm done doing it. Because then after that, you have to do the election. So I'm not too indifferent on it, but I think that removing it isn't going to be this big barrier opener that people may think it will be. So yeah, I think that's what I think.
Representative Everett.
Yeah, so a couple of things I wanted to address. I don't know if I'll be able to finish it all in a minute, but to one of the representatives' points of like some people may not feel comfortable going up to the general population if they're running for an identity-based position. I ran for identity-based position. Yes, it is scary because you don't know how someone's going to stand. However, I would argue that if you are so passionate that you want to run for this position to represent the entire community on behalf of like the student government, you should be comfortable enough to go up to someone in a crowded area. They're obviously not going to hurt you, hopefully. So that's just one point. The second point of like 25 like votes to another representative's point, like it isn't a lot, but the whole point of the petition process is just to get onto the ballot. Whenever I go campaigning, I'm like, this isn't you voting for me. This is me just getting on the ballot, showing your support. Like this is not an official vote in any way. So I think it is good to engage with the community. I don't think it's barrier to entry, and that's it.
Thank you for that, Representative Vincent.
I'm starting to sort of sense a consensus here, and I understand that Chair Verma has a prelim coming up, so I motion to close debate.
There's a motion on the floor. Do we have a second? Second. There's a second, and was that by unanimous consent?
By unanimous consent.
Any dissent?
I have a question.
Yes, Representative.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear
you. I have my hand raised for a minute. I don't. But yeah. My question, can I continue? Oh,
sorry. We'll need
can
to
I ask my question
withdraw
now?
The motion first before we can get you to ask a question.
I'll withdraw.
Okay.
Representative Rizaka.
Yeah, my question was basically, how would you ensure, like, with the paper petitions that, the actual students sign the paper? Because if I was running for, like, let's say Cal's representative and I just knew the names of, like, 25 students in Cal's, I could just write their names. So, like, how would those signatures be validated other than just, like, the word of the person running?
Sure. I guess the answer is twofold over here. One is on the validity of the students themselves, we run it through the actual NetID lookup. Second, there is a challenge process. We, again, as a part of every step of this process, there's a level of integrity that is required of all candidates. If any part of a candidacy is seen as morally, ethically corrupt, these are things that come up in challenges, and we have historically had them. There are members of the community that have brought up concerns, and we as a committee do sort through these, and if it is something that is still contentious, this would be going to the Office of Ethics for further review. So there are multiple checks to that.
Thank you so much. I will now be implementing a speaking time of 30 seconds. That being said, Vice President Parikh.
Yeah, I just want to very briefly kind of like put out my thoughts on this. I am like kind of in the middle of both of these sides. I think that there having a petition requirement is very valid, and I think there should be some sort of standard. But at the same time, I'm very concerned as to how like implementing these paper petitions and stopping supporters from petitioning is going to like increase the threshold to a point where I think it'll be unreasonably difficult. So for that reason, I'm inclined to vote yes on the amendment. But yeah, those are my thoughts.
There is a motion. There is a dissent. Was there a second to that motion?
A second.
There was a second. Do we have any dissent? State your dissent.
I'd just like to say one more thing. Are you going to withdraw your motion?
My motion.
Lovely. I'm just going to say real quick, again, if the will of the assembly is we want petitioning still, that's totally fine. The last thing we should do, though, is workshop this for the spring semester. I think that this is a perfect time if we want to try out substantial change and like see if it opens things up and we get a ton more candidates. I think we should do it now. But if we don't do it now, we definitely shouldn't try it out for the spring semester with every single new person running. If we're going to workshop it, we should workshop it now.
That is time. The chair would smile favorably upon a motion to end debate.
I motion to end debate.
Is that there is a motion on the floor. There is a second. Is there any dissent?
I dissent.
State your dissent.
Oh, I have a point to make. Comment, statement, question. So I was just wondering, like in the same vein of what Patrick was just talking about like next semester would not be the semester like try it out. How about like we implement like a temporary order for this semester, because it's relatively low stakes. It's just like the freshman seats. Like we could probably like do like a temporary amendment or whatever, and then if it works out, we could kind of compare it to last year's election and see like how many people run, and then if we see that it causes like more competitive campaigns, if more people are signing up, then we could actually permanently implement it. But I would smile favorably to like have a transition test period.
That is time. Thank you so much. Representative Vincent, do you withdraw your motion?
Okay, I have dissent you then.
There is a dissent. With that being said, we'll now have to vote on this motion. So all those in favor of the motion to end debate, please raise your placards. All those against? In a vote of 4-7, that motion fails. That being said, I will now be implementing a speaking time of 20 seconds. President Keel.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we have to pass election rules every semester we do elections. So we have to pass election rules again before the spring semester, before the spring elections. So we're going to have to come back to these election rules regardless. If this doesn't work, we can just add it back in the next election rules that we have to pass for the spring elections.
Thank you for that. Representative Everett.
Okay, two things really quickly. One, could we possibly just table this? I feel like, you know, maybe we should get some, not voting, I think we should vote on the election rules. Like, I think we should pass it. I think this specific amendment we should make separately. Also, could we possibly hear from community members? Like, how they feel about this, people in the audience? Like, could we put it out like, hey, come to the assembly. We want to hear how you feel about this. I just feel like it's kind of rushed right now. I don't know.
So community members, one designated one may have full debate rights, but no voting rights. So if any community member has any input or would like to share their thoughts at this time, you in the back.
Hi, I'm a freshman. I feel like the petition idea, I think the petition is honestly necessary. I think when it comes to the positions that you talk about are empty, why not in the spring, instead of saying that the petition is a barrier for entry, you say, okay, these are the races that are have
contest. That is time. Thank you so much.
Like motion to extend our time, like
keeping this moving.
Can I move to extend her time or something?
Would you like to finish your thought? I apologize.
Okay. For the seats that, like, for the races that are contested, then those have a petition threshold. You go through one election cycle, and all the seats that had absolutely no one running, then you open it up to the community with no petition barrier, and you do it again. So you say that, okay, there was no disability representative. We go through one cycle of elections with all of the at-large and et cetera. And then the next cycle, you open it up to the community in larger announcements, emails, say, would you like to be in this position? Yes, no. And then have a second set of I don't know, elections. Yeah.
All right. That being said, as the chair, I will call the question and move to vote.
Sorry, point of information. Are we voting on the amendment or the, could we possibly table this like amendment to the amendment, like vote on election rules, but talk about the amendment part later?
Thank you for that. Yeah. So yes, to clarify right now, this past debate has been on the amendment. If we would like to postpone or table this amendment, actually, I think that would be an excellent point of inquiry for our parliamentarian regarding procedure.
Yeah, so if the assembly would like to, well, no, frankly, we have to pass election rules and we can't go back after the fact. We need to go ahead and start implementing these election rules now for our upcoming elections. So we're going to have to decide. Yeah.
Just want to sort of add one brief thing on. Basically, you have to think, we have the election rules up here. We're making an amendment. We need to, only one question is allowed to be pending before the assembly at any given time. So we need to deal with the amendment before we can pass the election rules. So anyone's allowed to make a motion here. We can do a couple things. We can end debate and then vote up or down on this. Someone can move to, or you can move to suspend indefinitely, which basically kills it. But we can either vote or we can just say we're not going to do it, but we have to deal with the amendment before we can deal with the underlying matter.
Thank you, Parliamentarian Letterman.
Information.
State your point.
Was it a question? I don't know. But so if y'all was to pass this today without the amendment, could there be another resolution to amend the election rules? Or this was like, this is it?
Unfortunately not. Would like not be possible day. At the time. Election rules would have to be, I mean, any amendments would have to be made today on the floor in order to keep everything in the calendar consistent.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Wang.
Two really quick points. So in response to the community member, I think that's a great idea. I think this is up to Representative Verma. Sorry, but is it possible we could do like a petition, and then if there's a seat that doesn't have anyone running during the week-long period or whatever period after petitions, just open that up to the public so anyone can sign up, since no one ran for it in general. And then a second point, to validate the in-person signatures, because like we've all been kind of worried about how to validate those, is it possible that we could require people to write down their 7-number ID, which only they would know, so that we can know it's them, because it's like on your ID, but like no one else knows it except for yourself.
Thank you, Representative Wang. Seeing as we are in a motion to call the vote, I'd like to clarify that a point of inquiry must be made about parliamentary procedure to the parliamentarian. That being said, I once again call the question. So all those in favor to pass this amendment, please raise your placards. All those against? In a vote of 4-7, that motion fails. And the chair would look favorably upon a motion to end debate on this resolution. President Kuehl? There's a second on the floor. Do we have a dissent? Seeing no dissent, this motion passes. All those in favor of passing the election rules in this resolution, please raise your placards. All those against? And all those abstaining? In a vote of 10-1-4, this resolution passes. Thank you so much, Director Verma.
If I may make a brief comment before I head up, I do appreciate all of this discussion on election rules, and if these are thoughts that people do have, I highly encourage coming to further election meetings so that we can workshop these so that they are tried and tested before the spring elections. I'd rather have a fleshed out amended version of the elections. If this is something people are passionate about, please contact me.
Thank you so much. And yes, to keep on that point, I encourage you all to reach out to any chair or officer of the assembly when it comes to any amendments like these. And on our end, we'll do more, we'll put in more of an initiative to make sure that the assembly is up to speed about these ongoing initiatives. Thank you so much. With that being said, I cede the chair back to President Kiel.
Thank you, Executive Vice President Ting, and thank you for presenting, Director Verma. And thank you for everyone for your engaged debate. With that, we will now move on in our section to the reports section. Any reports from the exec? Announcements. Okay, yeah, so on 9/28, the president, President Pollack, is coming to speak to the assembly. We need questions submitted to President Pollack. It would be good if everyone submitted questions ahead of time so she has time to prepare. You can ask questions without submitting them, but I think you will all find that you'll get more substantial answers, more fleshed out answers, more thought out answers if you submit questions ahead of time. So also, I'll send out a reminder about this, but please wear dress formal to that. Point of information recognized.
Are ex officio members allowed to submit questions and do one to that over email?
Yes.
For both questions?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. A next announcement addressing recent crime reports. Oh, lovely. Real quick, there is a Google form where you can submit questions for President Pollack. Addressing recent crime reports, there were crime reports that went out today. If anybody would like to write a resolution about that in the coming weeks, that would be appreciated, or sense of the body resolution. Those are rape, arson, and other things. So that would be appreciated. Next, we'll move on to a report section. Officers, I will go first. I've been working really hard to make sure that everyone's engaged in the community. We have Niles and Adam going to AgFest tomorrow. Niles will be in the cow suit if you want to go see him, tabling for student assembly. I also sent out tasks for the weeks to the committees, asking that people try to get engaged instead of times to table in different locations around campus to really raise visibility and interact with community members, as well as get suggestions for different things. So I'm excited to see that happen in the coming weeks. We've just been getting everything set up, liaisons appointed, having meetings. There's a lot of cool student initiatives that are going to be coming up in the coming weeks. So yes, Executive Vice President Ting.
Thank you so much. Like President Kiel mentioned last, we will be collecting information and any topics or questions you might have for President Pollack. Some of the ongoing topics that we have right now include anywhere from the Freedom of Expression theme year to addressing food insecurity on campus. It's a great time to really get the president and VP's opinions and just any like more details fleshed out on ongoing student issues. Other than that, please expect in your inbox in the next few days, two Google Form reports for both committee and byline liaison reports. This is just a standardized form of getting your meeting agenda minutes down, as well as reporting anything that you might need executive board support on. So watch out for that in your inbox.
Lovely. Vice President for Finance.
Nothing for me. I'll wait till I get to the committee chair report to touch on APSCOM.
Lovely. VPI Ops.
Sure, a couple of things. First, we had another meeting last week. We will be going through our charter amendment on Article 4. That's one that deals with membership today. And I'll be doing more thank yous, but we've been an extraordinary time. I want to thank, you know, Nicholas, Agnes, Al-Hassan, Patrick for showing up to that. And then also we will have, we'll have to make an amendment today to the resolution, charter resolution we considered last week. And then just one other note I want to make here, and I know we will be having an orientation coming forward, and hopefully we can get a lot of your questions answered about how the assembly operates and just going through that. Just a couple of quick pointers, and I'm sure this is a little annoying, but I hope this is somewhat helpful to all of you. And if there's anyone to blame for you guys not knowing this, it's me. But you can make amendments at any time. So if we have a resolution on the floor, anybody can make an amendment. And when amendments are made, they're almost always debatable. So if I offer something forward, someone can say, we're just going to, and the way you do it, you just say, I move to strike this text and insert that text, or just strike it if you're not inserting, or just insert. But that's typically how that's done. And then one other thing, and this is just some coming up, I just wanted to touch on, and I'll pass it over to Nicholas in a second, is when we move to close debate, and I'm sorry, I was annoying about this earlier, it is not debatable. So when someone moves to close debate, there can be no debate on that. You think it's sort of, you can imagine how that might lead to sort of excessive debates, debating on closing debate, and then you can make another motion on closing that debate, you know, and so on, forever and ever. So if someone moves to close debate, you can just object to it, right? That's what we say called dissent. You can just object, but beyond that, we just then do a vote on that, if that makes sense. But there's no, or hopefully we can deal with that more in the future, but just to keep things moving speedily, when you move to close debate, it's not debatable. Do you have any other points?
The one thing I will point out is when you dissent to doing something by unanimous consent, that is not debating. That is not on the merits of the resolution. That is on the merits of whether or not we're going to keep debating. Because when you dissent, that is for the chair to know that, you know, people want to keep debating. And so that's when we move into, you know, not adopting by unanimous consent and adopting through a majority or two-thirds vote. So when the chair says state your dissent, that's not to keep debating the merits of your resolution. That is to speak as to why you think, you know, you just want to keep talking.
Lovely. Vice President for External Communications, Mr. Freak.
Yeah, we had our first committee meeting this week for external communications, working on kind of restructuring and like getting everything in terms of outreach back up to speed for the SA, creating a new Instagram since we were very unfortunately locked out of our previous one. We're trying to set up a biweekly newsletter that we're working on, hopefully should have that out starting next week. And then a couple other different initiatives, but those are the two big ones for now.
Lovely. Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion.
Yeah, so a couple of things. There's going to be like a few resolutions moving through the DEI committee within the next coming weeks, mainly on the premise of like school exemptions for religious holidays, with that like Ramadan as well as Jewish holidays, so like Rosh Hashanah, Passover, etc. So I'll be working with Chairperson Bongarov with that, as well as Representative Wallen. Also, I saw like a concerning post on Reddit about like this child, like not a child, a student who was just saying that they were unable to find like food resources on campus because like either they closed too early and they were just being sent like all over like different resources on campus. Honestly, that just made me think about like the amount of students who are like really facing food insecurity on a day-to-day basis. Like if you think about like those days where you're studying till like 4 a.m., like you're hungry. Like some students have the privilege of like ordering food, which costs like $20 to $30 in Ithaca. That's not the reality for a lot of students on this campus. So really just figuring out like ways to like implement a new system that doesn't really step on the toes of any existing organizations that offers food on campus, but just like trying to like refine the system for like those one, like every so often situations so that people have access to food 24/7. And yeah, that's all for right now.
Lovely. We'll now move into our committee chairs, academic policy. Mr. Hyde.
So we had our first meeting yesterday. It was really, really quick. Basically, we discussed like the median grades on transcripts, possibly removing that. And so over the next couple of weeks, we'll probably be taking initiatives to work with the Faculty Senate because they're passing something in like mid-October. So we're going to see if we can work with them to get that situated. And in the, I guess, in terms of meeting times, probably every other week, still deciding on a day between probably likely Wednesday or Friday, but like I'll send out a when to meet so we can get that situated later.
Lovely, thank you. Environmental Committee, Representative Benson. A little closer to the mic, please.
I think it's on now. So we did not meet this week. However, we are going to be meeting for the first time this Sunday. And we will be sort of discussing what the our sort of main goals are going to be moving forward. So that's all I have to report.
Lovely. Thank you. Financial Aid Review Committee, Representative Ananya.
Nothing to report as of right now, but still need seats filled. So please come talk to me if you are interested and getting in contact with the administration side of that. Thank you.
Lovely, thank you. International students is not present. SAIFC, Parliamentary McGuard.
Yeah, so SAIFC had their first meeting recently. We have some great initiatives that we're working on, different competitions within the colleges and project teams, and we have a great student initiative that we're also going to be working on. So like I said last meeting, if you're interested in being involved in infrastructure projects here on campus, I would definitely encourage you to get involved.
Lovely, thank you. And Student Health, Representative Wang.
Yeah, so we've met once this semester. This week, I finalized our undergrad like community members, and I'm going to be sending out a form tonight about weekly meetings because I realized like the time that we were meeting at originally is conflicting with other committees. So yeah, just keep an eye out for that.
Appropriations Committee.
Thank you. So we have a few announcements. So before every meeting of the Appropriations Committee, we have to discuss who we're going to be meeting with like this upcoming Sunday. So the first meeting of the Appropriations Committee is Sunday, September 19th from 11 to 3 p.m. We'll be meeting with CU Tonight, Club Sports Council, and the Athletics and Physical Education Department. In terms of the makeup of membership of the Appropriations Committee, the current members are myself, Clyde Lederman, Andrew Richman, Casey Plotkin, Lucia Ballesteri, the future freshman rep, and then in terms of the people that applied that are community members, it's Arjun Parikh, Daryl Darty, John Hanna, Obaya Chijoke, and William Swenson. So yeah.
Obaya Chijoke.
Yes. Yeah, sorry. I can't pronounce names. That's my mistake. But yeah, so looking forward to Appropriations Committee, and I'll present on the eligibility of applicants coming up. So.
Lovely. All right, next we'll move on to our presentation section, presentation on SAF applications. Rocco De Lorenzo.
Right. Cool. So today I went through all of the applications and identified any pieces that were missing or eligibility requirements that were not met. And I did my best throughout the day to address them, but they should all be within the packet. And then I have a few updates I received via email, which I'll go over. So basically, if they're highlighted in green, everything is all good. They met all the requirements. If they're in yellow, they did not submit their application yet. And so we're going to have to find a way to address that, to figure out what total we're looking at as of now. And then if they're in red, they submitted the application, but we're missing some part of the eligibility requirements. So for alternative breaks, one of the eligibility requirements is that they need to request at least 50 cents per student per year of the student activity fee. Alternative Breaks has this rollover funds from the COVID years. And so they're looking this year to still remain a byline, but then eat down at that amount, which in all honesty is probably the best scenario because they have that money and that can carry them the next 2 years. So basically, I'm not sure how we waive these requirements, if it's just a simple majority vote, but my recommendation is Alt Breaks is operated by a very good advisor. They're looking to just kind of eat down the rollover money that they have to be able to do that. And so it's not really necessary for them to request money, but they should still remain a byline. So any insight to that from parliamentarian or Clyde would be helpful. All good. Okay. So do we just like take a vote to waive that requirement or?
Yeah, we can, if you want to propose, propose that you can.
Okay.
We have to do it in a resolution form.
Yep. We can just put it in the final resolution when we approve the SAF. We can just put it as one of the resolve clauses.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Lovely.
Lovely. So the next one that was missing something was Minds Matter at Cornell. And so this organization, they did not include the department budget statement, which they had to obtain from the Skorton Center for Health Initiatives. And so earlier today, I emailed them. They're working on getting it. They did send it to me. So technically, they should be in green now. This is just when it was printed. It's in red. But yeah, so they are, they're all set. The TACON Center for New Student Orientation. So these guys last year, they were the orientation steering committee, and then we transferred that to the TACON Center so that they could put on orientation. As part of that, they hired 12 student workers, not paid from the student activity fee, but from the TACON budget to help them with orientation. And so when I emailed them, basically asking why they didn't have the eligibility requirement selected that says this org is a student-directed and student-led. They basically said that it wasn't a mistake, that they're part of a department and they're not run or led by students. But I think that for like the TACON Center, maybe they didn't really understand what that structure meant, because I think they thought that when they went to a department, they would act more like club insurance does in terms of risk management. Like obviously no student is a part of that, but we need that on the activity fee to have the clubs. So again, my recommendation is basically like we waive the requirement, but then like advocate for them in the meeting to have more student input or like find out why, you know, get at the reason why, like it should be realistically, like if you're taking money from the student activity fee, it should be, you know, maybe not student directed, but definitely student led in that aspect. So I'm just curious on thoughts, if anyone has any on those.
Vice President Letterman.
Yeah, I think it's important that even with the departmentalization shift that we make sure that it's student led. I mean, I'd support waiving it. Do you mind if I ask you a question about number 11 and 12?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that just you think they forgot to submit it, that they didn't know they had to do it? Because like the readership program is pretty important, as is club insurance. So I was just sort of wondering what you thought was going on there.
Right. So yeah, so skipped over 10, but we'll come right back to that. For 11, 12, those are the Cornell departments and they've yet to submit them. Nikisha, who is the director of the risk management office, who submits the club insurance, I let her know that she was supposed to submit it. It got lost in translation over the emails I sent out in the summer. And so then when I asked her to submit it by yesterday, there was an emergency that came up that she had to go deal with. So still waiting on that. It's hard because we can't necessarily knock club insurance off the activity fee, because without the club insurance, then none of the clubs can exist. So we're kind of in a bind right now where we're just waiting for her to submit it. And that amount of money, we really don't necessarily have a say over. Like they'll just, whatever insurance company they use, they're just going to give them a number and be like, you kind of have to allocate this. And so we'll do our best, but that's sort of the special scenario with club insurance. Regarding the Collegiate Readership Program, so under the accounts I have access to on Oracle, Which are the Student Assembly Investment Disbursement Account, the Student Assembly Admin Account, as well as the Student Assembly Reserve Account. I also have access to the Collegiate Readership Account. So this is a question of, like, was I supposed to submit that one? Like, I submitted the Student Assembly, but I also am not sure because Collegiate Readership is tied under Cornell University Library as, like, a department. And so they technically have to submit something on the back end to advocate for that. But collegiate readership is sort of the same thing like club insurance, where so many people rely on the free New York Times and free Wall Street Journal that we necessarily just kind of have to pay whatever that subscription fee is for everyone. It's like a yearly rate that they dish out. So still going to figure it out with them. I believe their meeting isn't for a while, so we still have time, but it's just something to note. I would say, lastly, while we're touching on the ones that did not submit it, the Environmental Collaborative was one of the orgs that received 50 cents in the last allocation cycle, and they did have a significant rollover. And so in talking with them, me, Patrick, Clyde, met with their co-presidents as well as advisor and Carly Boudet from Campus Activities, and they ultimately decided that because of the substantial rollover that they have, they're going to actually move down under SAFC instead of applying for byline funding. And so I just got confirmation via email that they decided to not pursue the application cycle and instead are applying to be byline funded, or you'll go with SAFC funding instead for the next 2 years. So that's the update on that. The last one is athletics and physical education, which we are meeting with this weekend. And so they did not hit like 5 of the eligibility requirements. So I basically sent an email and asked Larry about it. And essentially, like, you know, talking with like Carly too, like athletics and physical education is like a department thing. They don't have like a club underneath them running it because this money goes to like the marketing services and free giveaways that they do, as well as the Big Red Sports Pass, which is the thing that like all students can go get. And then it's free admission to all of the athletic events besides, I believe, Cornell hockey. And so definitely going to have a discussion with him about, you know, the role of athletics and physical education on the byline, if they're not going to be student director, student led, and only just provide the Big Red Sports Pass and then give away like free, like, you know, megaphones and foam fingers. It's kind of like, you know, it's a difficult situation. I like to hear thoughts on that. Just we can take that to the meeting on Sunday. But they still are kind of in a scenario where like they rely on the funding. So it's, I don't know, it's tough, but yeah. Any thoughts on any of these or any concerns people have, questions?
Seeing none, we will move on with the agenda.
Sweet. Well, looking forward to this cycle and yeah. Good stuff.
Lovely. Thank you, Vice President DeLorenzo. With that being said, the chair would smile favorably on a motion to recess for 5 minutes for everyone to take a break, go to the bathrooms, drink some water, grab some food before we come back. Vice President Tang.
Recess for 5 minutes.
The motion is in order. Is there a second?
Second.
Lovely. Spidey, any dissent? All right. It's all. Oh, there we go. Delegates, please take your seats. Delegates, please take your seats. Delegates, please take your seats. Please take your seats. Delegates, please take your seats. Representatives. Representatives, please take your seats. We are back in session. We will be moving on with the agenda. Next on the agenda is old business, which is Resolution 17, creating a Student Assembly Advisory Board. This has been rolled into the new charter amendments, Resolution 20, so we will not be presenting on that today. Oh. Vice President Letterman.
I move that Resolution 17 be suspended indefinitely.
Seconded. Any dissent?
Yeah, dissent. Could I have a point of information? Is that dissent?
No.
Oh, okay. Why was it tabled indefinitely?
Resolution 17 was moved into Resolution 20, which contains more stuff. So that will be presented on today if we get to it. And that will have to be passed at the next meeting regardless, because charter amendments take two meetings. So there'll be plenty of time to review, but it just combined resolution so we didn't have resolution after resolution after resolution. Any dissent to that motion? Seeing none, Resolution 17 is stricken indefinitely. Resolution 18, rollover funds, with which Vice President De Lorenzo will be presenting on.
Sweet.
Please speak into the microphone, Representative.
What is resolution? It's resolution 18 or 19. So I think we got the numbering screwed up just a little.
So I believe it says 19 in the box, but it was misnumbered. It should be resolution 18.
Okay. So do we motion to amend this resolution to say resolution 18 to create a process for the reallocation of rollover funds by unanimous consent?
I don't believe that is necessary, but it's just relabeled in the box.
Got it. Awesome. So we presented, or Patrick presented this last week. The abstract of this is that this resolution amends the charter of the Student Assembly to create a process for the reallocation of rollover funds of byline orgs. So basically, the Student Assembly were tasked with like the responsibility to examine any matters involving interests or concerns of the student community. The charter says that the board of trustees and the president are like the delegates of the activity fee, just like some charter nonsense thrown in here. The assembly is an elected representative body of undergrad students, maintains a fiduciary responsibility to appropriate funds in best interest of the undergrad student body to ensure its appropriations reflect the interests and needs of the undergrad student body. With the excessive accumulation of unobligated funds in the reserve accounts of byline orgs raised through the student activity fee, this represents an ineffective allocation of funds and a financial disservice to undergrad students. Whereas it is the sense of the assembly to reappropriate the funds by means of levying a fine or fee against the student activity fee funded orgs, represents an oblique method for reappropriating reserve funds and prefers a transparent process for the reallocation of unobligated funds. Now, be it therefore resolved that the following text be inserted as Section 13, Appendix A of the Charter of the Student Assembly. So this text here, it says, it shall be the prerogative of the Student Assembly as a member of internal policy to transfer or reappropriate funds held in student activity fee funded orgs or committee's reserve account, provided that the amount transferred or reappropriated does not reduce the balance in any such reserve account below 30% of the relevant organization's or committee's annual student activity fee appropriation, 21 days prior to the proposed transfer or reallocation pursuant to paragraph A of this section, the assembly shall notify the treasurer and advisor of the relevant organization or committee in writing of the proposed transfers or reallocation, specifying the amount of the transfer or reallocation. If the organization or committee should object, it shall then notify the assembly no later than 7 days following issuance of the notify. At which point the president of the assembly shall schedule a time for the assembly to hear and decide an appeal from the organization or committee. Be it further resolved that immediately upon approval by the university president, this resolution shall enter into force. With that, I would smile favorably on an amendment to fix where this will be inserted in the charter. Yes.
Vice President Letterman.
I ask unanimous consent. Oh, loud. Thanks. I ask unanimous consent that lines 28 through 30 be struck and in their place the following be inserted. Now, therefore, be resolved that the following text be inserted as Appendix B, Section 2, Subsection E, the Charter of the Student Assembly, and that the following line reads Subsection E, colon, rollover funds.
That is in order. Is there a second? That is second. Is there any dissent to changing the section to reflect current practices? Seeing no dissent, that amendment is in order and the resolution is changed. The floor is now open for discussion on this resolution.
I would also smile favorably upon an amendment to amend line 42 where a time is repeated twice. And so
that is in order. You can make amendments too.
Okay. I motion to amend line 42 of this resolution to say of the assembly shall schedule a time for the assembly to hear and decide an appeal.
That is in order. Is there a second? That is second.
Yes.
Is there any dissent to fixing that? Seeing none, that is ordered. The floor is now open for discussion. Vice President Parikh. That is an order. Is there a second? All right. All those in favor, raise your placards. All those opposed? The count is 14. 14 to 0 to the rest. Thank you, Vice President Lerner. All right. We are moving on. Thank you. Congratulations for passing that resolution. Resolution 20, Charter Article 4 Amendments. You may begin your presentation.
All righty. Thanks, folks. We are looking at Resolution 20, amendments to Article 4 of the Charter. Just flip to the following page. In the bottom, it'll say 3 of 8. It'll start an appendix to Resolution 21. This is just how it's going to read. The marked up copy is in the box. It's like marked as Resolution 20 markup or something like that. But let me give a little background, then I'll turn it over to everyone else to begin presenting. And sorry you have to hear from me more today, but we'll try to keep this brief. And no votes will be taken on this day. All final votes will be taken next week. So we are looking at Article 4 of the Charter. This section deals with membership. It says the composition of the assembly, the methods of election, the term of the assembly, who the assembly's advisor is, attendance requirements, how vacancies are filled, how voting members are recalled, and the responsibilities of voting members. And the reason we're doing this, and maybe Ahsan, I want to turn it over to you to talk about the genesis of all this.
Oh, these changes stem from Resolution 3, which was written by the Office of Ethics, solving or giving a temporary solution to the issue of presidential succession, which was the beginning of this term of the assembly. These changes outline or make clear the wording that led to confusion on who would pick up vacancies, and thus, through, I guess, like itemizing every single thing on here, the goal of this resolution is to make it streamlined for every future assembly that when there is a vacancy in any seat, including the EVP and the president, that it's clear.
And then we have a couple other highlights in here today. So just, actually, Nicholas, do you want to go through how we work?
Sure. So starting off, our Section 1, which defines the number of seats on the student assembly, our largest change there was we have added more undesignated at-large seats. Our basis for doing this is the student assembly has had the same number of voting members for quite some time, despite a rather large increase in university membership. And our assembly has not grown in order to match that. And we had considered putting more seats towards our college representatives. However, some colleges tend to send more people to the assembly than others. So we want to give all students the opportunity to get involved in the assembly through these undesignated seats.
And then so the biggest change, so we changed that from two undesignated at large to 5. I'm going to give it to Agnes in 1 second, but a lot of this it was worded very strangely in the previous version. If you look at the marked up version on the box, like it will say something in addition, 13 members will be elected by and from the university. This is the current version. A university undergraduate student population, a whole 2 seats are to be reserved. And it just sort of talks about them being reserved. It's sort of odd language. So what we did is we broke it down into each section. We said, for instance, 1 voting member of the assembly shall be elected at the women's issues representative by and from the university undergraduate population as a whole to represent women's issues. Like we just tried to make it very clear when we went through it. So that was sort of one big change. And that's what most of this is throughout, is there were a couple of sort of significant changes, but most of them are sort of language, and we can go through the more significant ones. Before I hand it over to Agnes, one other thing this was a more significant change, was properly defining what counts as a qualification to be a voting member. So if you look at Section 2A, what this talks about, or what you need to be a voting member and how we reworded this. So we just said, if in order to be a voting member, you need to be a registered full-time undergraduate at Cornell for the duration of the term. It says no voting member shall represent a particular college or school without being a registered full-time student in the same, nor shall a voting member hold office without meeting the qualifications set forth for that office. What that last line does is says, if there's a particular requirement, like you have to be a freshman rep, you actually have to be a freshman in order to hold that. And then B there, Section 2, subsection B, this is more clearly defining when people. Right now, we have a rule in the charter that if you go off campus, like to Cornell, Washington, or abroad, you can't be on the assembly. We more clearly define that as just 3 weeks during the academic year. We're open to amending that, but those are the big changes there. And then we also added, how does this disqualification actually work? This was a big issue in 2020 that they tried to throw a bunch of members off. And so we basically said, if you don't meet the sections in order to be qualified, you need an affirmative two-thirds vote to actually say that you're not qualified to hold office. I am going to hand it over to Agnes for sections 3 through 5.
Yeah, so if you can take a look at section 4 in particular, we're keeping pretty much that the same. We're still going to be using the IRV pair method or the rank choice method, which basically is the most equitable method of voting. It tallies up the number of first choice votes. The term of the assembly, we edited the language for that section as well. It used to be the term of each assembly shall commence on May 1st and expire on May 1st, which does not make sense. So we just edited that slightly. So it's the same exact actual implementation of the term. We didn't change B and C at all outside of formatting. And for non-voting membership, we just changed the verbiage of that from ex officio, because ex officio doesn't actually mean non-voting. It just means out of office. So that's more of a language change. But for sections 3 through 5, we pretty much kept everything consistent and just edited it for clarity and for consistency across the governing documents.
Yep, thank you very much, Agnes. Just talking about section 6, this is about the advisory board. So we kept, A is basically the same, the university president appoints one administrator. We also said, it could be a faculty member as well. That was not the case in the previous version, serving as advisor of the assembly. And then this is right now in B subsection. This is section 6, subsections B through E. That's on pages 5 and 6. This is about creating that advisory board that's defined here. So there'll be an advisory board to the assembly. It's responsibility to provide the assembly with counsel and guidance. Consists of 6 alumni, the student elected trustee, who either have served as a member of the assembly or student elected trustee, 2 members of the faculty senate, the university president or their designee, and 2 members of the assembly. Everyone on there, in order to serve on that board, will need to be elected by the assembly. So they can just sort of indicate their interest or basically appointed by us, except for the university president, who's sort of in there as a right. Section 7, again, this is not that exciting, but you know, these sort of changes need to be made. Everything is basically the same, except, well, the biggest issue is a fairly significant change here. If you look at section 7, subsection C, it used to be the charter outlined all these different ways in which attendance would work, and this is what caused all these problems in 2020. So what we've done instead here is just allowing the assembly to adopt attendance rules, but just saying that nobody can be kicked off for attending for fewer than 3 meetings, which is the rule right now, and then saying the assembly can't adopt attendance rules that interfere with the observance of a religious or cultural holiday, so we can't punish someone for not attending on any such holiday they choose to observe. Yeah, there's nothing too significant there. And then do you want to talk about the vacancy section? Because this is really where we the rubber hits the road and we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, so we have spent a lot of time going over how we believe vacancies should work. And the solution that we have came to keeps us in line with, we want to maintain the balance of having continuity on the student assembly while also allowing the student body to still, you know, ultimately be the ones deciding who sits on the assembly. So what we have decided to do is, if you look at, so it really starts with B. If there is a vacancy between May 1st and the conclusion of the spring semester, then it goes to the candidate getting the second highest number of votes, which is the process that we're probably familiar with. And for C, if the spring semester has already ended, that's when we get into the assembly would then be allowed to choose who the person that would be sitting on the assembly. We'd be doing this through a roll call vote. So people's votes would be public. So the student body would know you know, how the student assembly has decided to fill this seat. And this also, we've specifically put that this does apply to the offices of the president and the executive vice president as well. So there would no longer be a succession of another officer to either of those seats. In the event that either of the offices go vacant, then the office just remains vacant. There's no, someone is an acting president, acting executive vice president. The only thing would be, in order to maintain continuity on the student assembly, the next officer in line would become the acting chair. That person would not have any of the other powers of the president, except just to call and run a meeting. That would be it. And the purpose of that is so that they can call that meeting for the purpose of either A, installing that second runner-up as the president, or B, if it's after spring semester, then electing the new president.
We are coming up on time of 6:30. We will need a motion to extend time, or if we do not have that motion, then the meeting will end. Vice President De Lorenzo.
I motion to extend the meeting time by 15 minutes by unanimous consent.
Is there a second? I heard a second. Any dissent? Seeing no dissent, the meeting time is extended by 15 minutes.
So thank you. First, we're going to go on to one other significant change and amendment we have to make here, but any questions at this stage about anything we've talked about before we go on?
Archivist Kalinske.
So thank you all for this resolution. I think it does a lot of changes. It makes things more clear in actually what we're doing. I wanted to touch back upon what you were saying in section 2, subsection B, particularly elaborating on the absence of a student for more than 3 weeks during the academic year. My concern is that students who are fulfilling official Cornell responsibilities that require them to be off campus, so for example, representing Cornell at conferences or being part of like a traveling student, whatever, would be disallowed from being on it by this rule. I guess I'm just trying to figure out like, how do you see balancing that between someone who is obviously on campus, but is representing Cornell in an official capacity as compared to like Cornell in Washington or a semester abroad?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we basically wanted to just use the same rule and didn't want to change that a whole lot. So I don't know, anyone else to say on that too much? We can either change it to a higher standard. If you want to add some language in there, feel free to write an amendment and we can consider it this next meeting because it's coming up again next week. How does that sound?
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or can we move on? Mr. Courtney over here has some stuff to talk about. All right.
All right. Hello, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, I'm relatively new to the student assembly. My name is Noah Courtney. I spent 5 years in the U.S. Coast Guard, and I currently am on the executive board of the Cornell Undergraduate Veterans Association. And I've been working with this committee, and I'm very thankful for their leadership and guidance in my pursuit of a voting seat for the veterans representative on this assembly. This is a discussion that my community has had for probably about 3 or 4 years. In the past 7, 8 years. In the past 8 years, we have gone from a almost empty organization on campus. We were founded in 2015. And since a small group of veterans in 2015 founded our veterans organization, there are now upwards of 80 undergraduate veterans and upwards of 60 veterans in our graduate schools. I know that we're just focusing on undergraduates right now, but the growth of our community has been significant and our impact on campus has been the same. What I would like to propose is if you look at section one, subsection Mike, currently it reads that one voting member of the assembly shall be elected as veterans representative who shall have previously served in the armed forces of the United States, by and from undergraduate population, to represent students who have previously served in the armed forces of the United States. Overall, that is the merits of this state. My goal is that the veterans' seat should have a vote on this assembly, and we want to contribute to the Cornell student assembly in a favorable, positive way. I would like to propose an amendment that the language in section 1, subsection M, be changed to the following: that one member of the assembly shall be elected as veterans representative by and from the population of undergraduate students who currently or have previously served in the armed forces of the United States, except for undergraduate students who serve as members of the Reserve Officer Training Corps, to represent students who currently or have previously served in the armed forces of the United States. The merits of this amendment are just so that we are including military veterans. We are also including the numerous students that we have on campus that are currently serving in the National Guard and Reserve components of the military, and that we are specifically excluding the Reserve Officer Training Corps from potentially holding this seat because they are in a military training process and have not yet entered their time of service.
I second the amendment.
That's by unanimous consent. Lovely. Yes. Is there any dissent to that amendment? Seeing none, that amendment is in order. Are there any other motions on the floor this time? Vice President Ting.
Hey, all. First of all, I just wanted to say thank you so much for the countless hours that you all have put into this charter amendment. I understand that the internal operations meeting have run quite long over the few meetings that we've had and the few small amount of time that we have been on campus. Just a minor amendment on line 100 regarding the LGBTQIA representative. I noticed that on the current document it is written as LQBTIA. So I'd like to motion to amend that to reflect the more accurate acronym LGBTQIA+. And to insert the word queer on line 102 to reflect the full spectrum of identities here on campus.
Second.
There was a motion on the floor that was by unanimous consent. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, that is in order. Any other points or motions on the floor? Vice President Parikh.
Motion to amend resolution 20. By inserting or by striking the number 36 and inserting number 37 in section 1 clause A, and inserting the following as section 1 clause N, and renumbering the following clauses accordingly. One voting member of the assembly shall be elected as the student worker representative by and from the university undergraduate student population as a whole to represent undergraduate students employed by Cornell University. Just a quick note on like why I'm introducing this amendment. We have a very substantial population of student workers here. A very substantial population of student workers at Cornell University. We have a lot of student workers at Cornell University, and there is not any exclusive representation for them on the student assembly. I think given the contributions that student employees make to Cornell, whether it's in dining, research, as RAs, or in the various other capacities, they deserve representation on the assembly. And I think having a seat for them to represent that community is very warranted.
Second.
Lovely. Is that by unanimous consent?
Yes.
Is there any dissent? Seeing none, that is ordered. Vice President Tang.
On that, to balance the number of representatives we have at the moment, so now that we have this amendment to add a representative for student workers, I motion to amend line 78. Instead of saying seven voting members of the assembly shall be directly elected as representative at large, it to say six.
That motion is in order. Is there a second?
Second.
Lovely. Is there any dissent to that motion? Seeing none.
Just quick question.
Okay, we just have to vote on it now. There's no discussion on this. All those in favor of that amendment? All those opposed? The count is all in favor.
I'm going to move an amendment in light of the last amendment that section 1, subsection A, that the number 37 be stricken, and that in its place, number 36 be inserted.
That is an order. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, that is an order. Any further points or motions on the floor?
That's it for today for all of us. If you have any questions or want to submit amendments, feel free to reach out to any of us. We won't be meeting tomorrow because of Rosh Hashanah. You can guess whose calendar that might interfere with. That would be mine. But other than that, we'll be back here next week, hopefully to pass this. So thank you all for being patient.
Lovely. With that and recognizing the time, with that, recognizing the time, the chair would smile favorably to postpone the final two resolutions for next meeting. And it's not a motion. Someone else has to make it. So if someone else wants to make that motion.
I'll motion to suspend both resolutions until the next meeting.
The motion on the floor was to postpone both resolutions to the next meeting and adjourn the meeting. Any dissent to that motion?
Second.
Third.
Lovely. That is an order. This meeting is adjourned at 6:38 p.m. on Thursday, September 14th.